Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk. Town today.
Fan.com. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Bob Ramsey has stepped out. He, of course, has to call the game tonight for your Slew Billiken, so he is out getting ready to go interview Travis Ford. He will be back with us tomorrow, giving us a full game report and everything that went down over at Slew. Joining us now is the play-by-play man for your St. Louis Blues for KMOX Radio, Chris Kerber. Kerbs, how are you, sir?
TJ, I'm doing fine today. How are you?
I am doing just fine, thank you, sir. Here in the studio, we are big Bennington fans and loved seeing a kid come up who thought his career may have not quite been going the way he wanted. He kept saying, you know, I just want to be in the NHL. I think he hit his 100th game down the AHL earlier this year. Got his chance, pitched a shutout, but did not get a chance at the back-to-back there. Any thoughts on that either way? Was that just a planned thing? They were going to get Jake back in there and he's the guy? Or what thought went into that?
Yeah, I have zero issue with the way that was handled. It was the first back-to-back games that the Blues have had in a while. They said, we're going to give Bennington the first start. We're going to give Jake the second one. That was the plan that goes in. And I guess when I get asked that question a lot, I kind of answer it with a question coming back at people. And I said, okay, what if the Blues win that game 3-1? What if Philadelphia comes out, takes a 1-0 lead, the Blues come back, eventually win that game 3-1? Is your feeling any different on who should have started in the game last night? And because for a lot of people, it's all based on the fact that it was a shutout. And you know, to me, I think when you have a plan, you stick with it. And I thought it was just fine. Now, Jake's performance last night definitely opens the door, I think, for Bennington to get a start tomorrow night against Montreal if Craig Berube decides to go that way. So you know, I think that part is performance related, but. You know, hindsight's 20/20 on this one. I didn't have any problem going in, and so I don't have any problem with it right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think it was necessarily an issue. You do see guys rewarded sometimes and based on a shutout getting the next one, but I don't think there's a big issue either way. I don't think Bennington's going to be somebody that's stealing Jake Allen's job. It seems more that it would be about Jake Allen and his struggles this year. I know he hasn't had much help in front of him, but he's, I mean, even last night, again, two of those probably weren't his fault. One certainly looked like that was a Jake Allen problem, and he's had quite a few of those this year. Do you think right now, because you don't have any answers at goalie and you got a contract there with Jake, I don't know what the easy answer is to this. I don't think there is one. But is Jake Allen the biggest problem that the Blues have right now?
The biggest problem, that's a great way to ask that. No, I don't think he's the biggest problem. I think his play is one of the issues. Because I just don't think it'd be fair, because if you say he's the biggest problem, then you're pinning where you're on the season on the goaltending. And you've got a lot of other players that frankly have had better seasons than they've had. So I don't say that, but I don't think you can hide from the fact that the goaltending hasn't been where it needs to be. I don't think two of those goals last night, you know, were very good. I think you almost have to. Don't you expect a slap shot from Klingberg? And, you know, it didn't look at the time that the shot came through that the screen was there. Maybe it was by the time the puck got to the goal. But the second one is obviously just a bad goal no matter what. And one that just, I think, deflated the team. So, the goaltending is part of the storyline of the season as to why the Blues have not been able to get to 500 this year and why they get knocked on the door and hasn't been a part of it. And, you know, look, I look at it in a couple ways. One, when you talk with Jake, when you know Jake, a goalie, as much as anybody else knows, when they've given up a goal, that's a bad goal and a bad time and a team deflating goal, and they absolutely know it. You know, so I don't, is there an answer for it? Well, sure, you can put somebody else in and see if they can get on a little bit of a run. But I do think that if this team turns around right now, unless Doug Armstrong were to make a trade, you know, I don't see that fix coming from within at the moment. And so I think it's every bit as much Jake in goal as it is some of the forwards and some of the defensemen in front of them.
Yeah, it seems like there are probably two guys on this roster that have lived up to expectations, and both guys probably exceeded them. I think it's David Perron, who's on pace for around 60 points, which he had last year. Outside of that, really hasn't done that in his career. And Ryan O'Reilly, who's sitting there at about 80 points. Outside of that, is there anybody on this roster that's meeting the expectations you had for them to start the year?
Yeah, I think there's two, maybe three others I would add to that mix. Sundquist and Barbashev. Mm-hmm. And you know what? And I'm going to throw Robert Bortuzzo in there, you know, for right now. I think he's had some up and down games, but I think he, for the most part, has been pretty consistent when he has been in there. So, you know, those are the ones. The others have just had way too many peaks and way too many valleys. And unfortunately, it's been far too many valleys, you know, for the others. But I think if you said right now, you know, and you look at the consistent play you've been getting out of Sundquist and Barbashev, Sundquist having more even strength goals on the season than Vladimir Tarasenko does, I think you would take that consistent play without a doubt. David Perron, he's had some ups and downs, but he has been pretty solid, and it looks like he's developed some really good chemistry with Ryan O'Reilly, and then the season you've seen from Ryan O'Reilly speaks for itself.
Sundquist, couldn't agree more. I think he has been spectacular. I'm actually really excited for his future here in St. Louis. This one seems a little like can't see the tree for the forest, or however you say that saying here, but you watch the power play, they've been really up and down. Actually had a really strong start to the year. We're top 10 through the first 10 or 15 games, have really struggled, but it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, and the guy that we always look to on the power play is Vladimir Tarasenko. I don't know if this is more a him thing and he's just got to find the net. Early on in the season, he was getting his shots off. They were just going right into the chest of the goalie. I don't know what the answer is on this. Is this more a Tarasenko problem, or is it him not being utilized properly on the power play?
You know, the utilization on the power play is always an interesting question, because you can put a guy in a different spot, but if he doesn't want to play there and isn't going to play better there, then it doesn't matter. I think the power play issues are personnel and work ethic, and you know, but I think both have failed them. That's not just Vladimir Tarasenko. You know, a couple of years ago, Braden Schenn had 17 power play goals, mm-hmm. and you get those goals from going in front of the net. They put Braden Schenn, you know, with a shot to one time it on in the circle last night. They finally had Pat Maroon back out there with some of those top guys. But in the first power play opportunity, there was just one shot on goal, and then that group didn't get a shot on goal, and they had an opportunity on the second power play. I still think the power play has come because there just isn't enough direction. There isn't a defined, here's what our power play mentality is going to be, which is, and look, I'll simplify it. Get the puck to Colton Parayko, and Colton Parayko, you shoot it. Yeah. If you don't want to shoot it, you sit on the bench. You know, Vladimir Tarasenko, this is where we need you to be. If you don't want to play there, sit on the bench. Yeah. And at some point in time, while Craig Berube, I think, has been terrific with accountability in terms of he has not hesitated to make somebody a healthy scratch. We have seen that. You have to start wondering when you just for the heck of it, what's going to be the harm in throwing, you know, some of the, like a Sundquist who's played well and earned an opportunity. What's the harm in putting some of those guys out there? And when it's, whether it's Tarasenko or Schenn or Petrangelo or Steen or anybody. I mean, you can use any name as a placeholder. Would any of them, you know, turn around and look at you like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not going out on the board? You go, well, no, the power play's been at 10% in the last 20 games. Mm-hmm. No, you're not. And then if they want to put it out there, they could do one or two things. They either pout about it, don't play well, or they just fire it up and they work a little bit harder to get it done. Too many shots getting blocked, too many passes getting blocked, not shooting quickly enough. The best chances the Blues had on their power play in the last game was with the Parayko unit out there on the ice, and they moved the puck around a couple times. It led to some one-timers, and they got them through on net. That's what the Blues are going to have to do. So, somehow find a way to simplify and not grip their stick too tight on it. But where the power play could be a difference maker, it has not. And you're now basically, you're talking last year and then the first half of this season. It's really about the same as to where it was. It's not as low in the standings as it was, but it's as unimpactful as it was last year. And that has to be a concern, because go back to what Doug Armstrong said at the end of last year, TJ. I mean, he basically said, we missed the playoffs because our power play was bad. He hung it on special teams.
It really is tough to watch as they pass it around the circle and it gets cleared over and over and over again. I mean, we have watched power plays over the last few weeks where they get the opposition gets more shots than the Blues. And I don't recall ever seeing that. I mean, they'll get outshot 4-2 on their own power play. It really is frustrating. One of the guys that I think that I personally thought would be able to make a big difference on the power play that really hasn't is Pat Maroon. And I think on his contract, it is easily movable, $1.7 million. He took a hometown discount for a single year here. You're 41 games through the year. You're sitting fourth to last in the NHL. At what point do you actively start shopping some of these movable contracts and try to get some assets?
Well, you know, two questions really in that one there. One, you know, Pat Maroon, and you know he's frustrated. You got to think the pride that he had to put that blue note on his chest and what that meant to him personally is enormous. And to not have had the season that he put on himself, forget what everybody else expected, but to not have the season that he put on himself, you could imagine as a former athlete, TJ, just what it's like for him every day and the frustration that he's dealt with. So, you know, there's the reality of that situation. But I have to think right now, it's easy for people to say, well, just move some guys. Now, I've got to think that Doug Armstrong has done some reaching out and tried to do some things, whether it be with Pat or somebody else. And I'm not – the issue that the Blues have is who you get back.
Right.
If maybe somebody's willing to make a trade for you and you're trading you've got a guy with $1.5 million in salary and they've got a guy that maybe you want back and it's two, well, you're going to have to move two guys because of that because you're right up against the cap. So any trade – the Blues, from a trade standpoint – it has to be dollar for dollar or dollar for less, you know, coming back. And, you know, I think other teams know that. And so it gives some other teams a little bit of an upper hand sometimes when it comes to that. I just don't think you assume that Doug Armstrong is just sitting there doing nothing. I think he's kicked tires on several different things, but it just hasn't come to fruition, I think, the way he would want because you've gone halfway through the season now with this group that just has not shown the ability to be very consistent.
Yeah, I guess the question with Pat Maroon would be a little bit different because you're right, the contract being only $1.7 million doesn't open much for taking a guy back. Would you unload him for prospects in order just to get up a guy and clear some space to bring a Jordan Kyrou, who's been crushing it down the NHL, a Clem Costin, who his stats aren't very good down the AHL, but his performance in the Worlds, he was a captain over there for Russia. Do you try to unload him, get a prospect back, to put down the in the AHL just to create some room for these guys to get them legitimate minutes in the NHL?
No, not right now because I think, look, if you're doing that, then you're basically saying, okay, this season is lost and here's how we're going to handle that. And at the same time, you have to protect some assets. Look, you've got a scouting staff. You've got a head coach down in the American League. You got people evaluating the play, right? From the folks I've talked to, Clem Costin is not ready to come up and step into the National Hockey League yet. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason, you know, at his age to rush that. You've got some time. His willingness to come over and play in North America as a 19-year-old and play pro hockey, I think, speaks for itself. Jordan Kyrou is finding some success down there. He's finding success at the pro level. I know fans don't like to hear this. I'm all for keeping him there for a little while longer. Let that feeling continue to grow. I was in that league. I called games in that league for 4 years. I've seen, and we were affiliated. The different teams we were affiliated in that time were the LA Kings, the Hartford Whalers, and the Coyotes in Arizona. I saw young players find success, get called up, be put on fourth line, third line role, not play the same kind of minutes. Lose confidence, get sent back down, and get stuck in the minors for another year or two because they just weren't the same player. Mm-hmm. I think it is just as good to continue to develop, learn to be a pro, get some success, feel success in every situation. And that is every bit as much as a player's development important to that as coming up here and just to be able to play in the National Hockey League. Because right now you've got Jordan Kyrou playing in top roles, you know, and leading the team in scoring down there versus if he comes up here, who are you going to put him in for? I mean, you got Pat Maroon that's been playing now third-line minutes, and you know, and even shifted to a fourth line a couple of times. So I don't see the value in bringing Kai Rook to play those minutes. If you're going to bring him up and play him in the top six role, put him on the power play, let him feel it out, that's one thing. But to bring him up just to have him up, I don't see that as value to Jordan Kyrou. And, again, when we're talking prospects, TJ, they take time. I mean, look, you just so rarely do we see, and albeit it would just be flat-out awesome to see one of the Blues prospects finally come up and do it, and Alex DeBrincat in Chicago is doing or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that just doesn't happen all that often. And I go back to Nathan MacKinnon. Nathan MacKinnon is one heck of a hockey player, and they knew it. For a couple of years, the Colorado Avalanche are playing him as a third-line center, getting limited ice time, frustrated with his production. And he didn't take off on their top line until they moved Matt Duchene, who was getting some of those minutes. But even then, you're talking about a guy that last year was in his fifth year, now in his sixth year in the league. It takes these guys some time. You know, and so what's going to happen, you put more of those young guys in your lineup, you're going to find ways to continue to lose games and well, they got to mature through it. And I think they're trying to speed up some of that maturation process, and you can do that by letting a guy play in the minor leagues a little while.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you have guys that aren't particularly old. Ryan O'Reilly is not particularly old. Braden Schenn, not particularly old. These aren't guys that are going to be you may have to figure out their contracts in the next few years. Schenn, certainly. But they're not older guys. So where is the line if you do have to retool this roster? Let's say 20 games from now, whatever it is, 15 games from now, you're in the same spot. So you say, okay, this season you're not going anywhere. You've played 55, 60 games, and that's that. Where is the line of retooling of trying to keep some of this core together? Because it seems like there's a few different cores on this. The older, the Alexander Steen group, Tarasenko and these guys, the core that is here now, maybe Ryan O'Reilly's in that group, maybe Parayko in that group, and then you have the younger guys, which would be Dunn, and which would be Kyrou, which would be Robert Thomas and these guys. How do you mesh that all together with a retool before these guys get old and their contracts run out?
I think the factors that you're going to have to consider there are, as you just mentioned, one, current term on their contract, two, their age, and then three, organizationally where you are. So break it down by position. Goaltending. Unfortunately, you were hoping for more consistency from Jake this year. You haven't seen it. All right, so now you have to make a decision. What do you do with Jake? Do you keep him? Do you find a stronger backup? How does that part work with Jake? What is available from a goaltending standpoint along those lines? If you don't think that there's better out there than what you've got, you've already got a guy under a reasonable contract that's under contract. Ville Husso. You probably thought that Ville Husso was going to get the call over Jordan Binnington, but Ville Husso's been hurt, so Jordan Binnington's going to get a chance. How do you evaluate Husso, and how do you evaluate your goaltending organizationally will help dictate that move as well. So then you look defensively. Jay Bouwmeester's in the final year of a contract. It is hard to envision right now any kind of extension for the Blues. So assuming you don't move him at a deadline or sometime in the next little while, his contract expires. That opens up one spot. The other guy that's an unrestricted free agent defensively for you right now is Carl Gunnarsson. Interestingly enough, for the most part, now they weren't good last night, but he's played pretty well with Alex Pietrangelo. But how do you decide if you're going to re-sign Carl Gunnarsson? Well, how are the defensemen developing? How is Nico Mikkola developing down in the American Hockey League? Do you think Jake Walman can be a player? Jordan Schmaltz, they put him on waivers. They didn't have the confidence to get him in the lineup, especially once Gunnarsson got healthy. So how are you evaluating those guys is going to determine, do you sign a veteran guy like Carl Gunnarsson, or do you go to the free agent market and find something else there? The forward, and then the lastly on the defensive side, Alex Pietrangelo's contract is a really interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not about the player. This is, well, it is, I guess, sort of about the player to a degree in the play on the ice. But he'll turn 30 before the end of his contract next season. Well, what kind of free agent contract as an unrestricted free agent do you think that Alex Pietrangelo is going to want, both in length of contract and in terms of money? If you don't think that that's going to fit based on his age, and you don't see a 6 or 7 year deal in his wheelhouse, then you look at a guy and say, do you move somebody like that sooner versus later, because you're eyeing the future? You take that same approach with the forwards there in terms of who's got the contracts, who's got the lengths, and where you can move.
If you think, for example, that you have a player that's ready to step into a top six role, then you have the ability to maybe look at moving a top six forward. If you don't, you may hold on to that top six forward. I know it's a little long-winded away, but
no,
it kind of gives you at least some of the thought process of how you look at some of those contracts. Braden Schenn has another year on his contract. You're right, he's 27 years of age. And especially today, I think the trend that you're seeing with teams making deals is having another year of term on a guy's contract allows you to maybe get a little bit more out of it than trading a guy who's in his final year or going into his final year. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's another thing that plays a role in this, and just in terms of how trades and how teams are starting to handle the trends that are going on with it. So a lot of factors kind of play into that, and then you throw in what we had talked about before. Then you got the whole salary cap consideration aspect of it, and makes you just kind of sit back and go, oof, there's some work to be done.
Curbs, that was a fantastic answer. Thank you so much for your time here, and I look forward to touching base with you again next week.
You got it, guys. Thanks, TJ. Tickets for tomorrow's game at stlouisblues.com. Last chance to see the team before they head out on the road four straight out on the East Coast. So we look forward to having everybody down at Enterprise Center tomorrow night.
Good stuff. We will be there. Curbs, thanks again.
Okay, you got it, TJ. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye. That is Chris Kerber, the voice of your St. Louis Blues KMOX radio. Like I've told you, everybody loves John Kelly, and we hear him on Fox Sports Midwest. I know a lot of people, actually, who love Chris Kerber so much, they will put their radio headphones on while they're watching TV just to hear him call the game. So there you go. A lot of good insight from him as well for the Blues. And we didn't even get into what I think is going to be a discussion further down the road here, another 10, 15 games, and you're going to start looking at the draft. Is this, you got Hughes, lose for Hughes here, Jack Hughes. Is he one of the Connor McDavid play right away types? If so, great. If not, and you're probably not getting the first overall pick, how deep is the draft? Because that's when your team is not very good, you start that discussion in the middle of the season.
I like to listen to Chris Kerber call games while I'm taking a bath with lighted candles, sipping champagne.
I enjoy that too, yeah. Well, I don't know what to say to that. Matt Rocchio is not feeling very good. And I bet you that Bob Ramsey just threw up in his mouth as he was driving over to go have a conversation with Travis Ford. We, though, got to get to break. Rock, do we have any other okay, perfect. So we got to get to break. We're gonna have some NFL talk. Do we have – is Charlie Tuna coming in? He's not.
No.
Okay.
No.
Just you and me, baby. So we have –
Tuna's
have
a, listening. He can call in.
Okay.
Just didn't have time to call him.
Okay. And we have a NFL news. The coaching vacancies, there were eight. They are beginning to be filled. I believe either four or five of them are filled at this point. And all that is starting to take shape. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of these hires are fairly peculiar. So that gives some credence to people who have arguments for some of the fires. And we will dive into that in a bit. It's Hardline.